Thanks for clicking on our podcast. This is John Fraser, and with my partner in wine down in the Cape, Michael Olifier, each week we taste the very best that the Cape has to offer in wines or spirits, whatever tickles our fancy, and hopefully it'll tickle yours as well. Welcome back to Divine Intervention, the wine tasting podcast in which we travel through the glass down to the Cape and taste some of the finest wines, spirits, and other goodies that area has to offer. Today we're trying a white from the Cape area, but before I introduce the wine, time to introduce our celebrity chef, award-winning writer, cookbook author. There are very few things in the food and wine business that Michael Olifier hasn't excelled at. Michael, great to chat to you again.
Hi, John. Lovely being with you. Thank you so much.
Well, great to chat to you, Michael. And just so you and our listeners know, with me in the studio, we have financial journalist Gareth Stokes. Gareth, good evening and welcome.
Good evening, John.
And I haven't chatted to you since I was in the radio business quite a while ago, so it's good to have you on our podcasts at last. Someone who is no stranger to my wine slurping activities, and indeed we've shared a glass or two over some very nice meals in 2013. Jeff Osborne, who was with the RMI, the auto industry retail arm, now works for one of these online offerings. Tell us about that, Jeff.
Yes, thank you. Good evening, John, and thank you for the invitation to join you again. Looking forward to that. And you're quite right, I'm now with Gumtree Auto South Africa, the well-known, well-renowned classified online advertising.
Well, if you want to know where to find a good glass of wine, you listen to us. If you want to find anything else, go to Gumtree. Well, that's the guests and our celebrity taster, Michael Olifier. Now it's time to introduce the wine. It's a first sighting Sauvignon Blanc of 2013, very young, from Elim. Elim, is it?
Elim.
Is that a Elim? Michael, is Elim a part of the world or is that part of the name of the wine?
Elim is a part of the world. It is a former sort of missionary town down near Cape Agulhas, so you don't get much further south than that when it comes to vineyards.
Well, we've eliminated my stupidity for now. Tell us about the wine.
Well, this is Conrad Flock, who is the winemaker there at Strandveld Wines, which is the name of the company from which this wine comes. When you grow Sauvignon Blanc down in that, I mean, that's real sort of extreme stuff because the wind blows, you've got these tiny, stubby little vines battling to produce a crop, and you get a wine of tremendous character out of them. I think this wine is really, really well put together. It's got, as you said before we started recording, it's got that sort of gooseberry, pyrazine, grapefruit, fynbos herbaceousness to it.
I actually said cat pee, Michael.
Yeah, well, I was just being polite. And a really a lovely, crisp, fresh Sauvignon. This is a sort of a sitting by the pool on a Sunday morning or an aperitif before a dinner kind of wine.
And food-wise, you say an aperitif before dinner. If you were to take the bottle into the dining room, what would you
pair
with it?
Well, I think you'd be looking probably at some sort of nice summery salad. Funny enough, I sort of think avocado would go quite well with it. So if you had a lovely sort of leafy salad with some slices of avocado and some nice ripe oxheart tomatoes and feta cheese and pine nuts, etc. That would be a lovely, lovely link to the wine.
And of course, over the festive season, we are in Africa. It can be hot. If you're having something like cold gammon, I think this would go all right with that, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Both nice with a nice sort of berry, sweetish, porty berry sauce. Lovely.
Excellent. Well, I'm hungry already. But before I head off and have a nosh, my own views on this, very, very bright, very ripe. This is a very refreshing and I think quite light wine. It's maybe got quite a strong acidic quality to it, but that is nicely balanced by the fruit. I think this is a very pleasant Sauvignon Blanc. And of course, Michael, Sauvignon Blanc is one of the favourites in South Africa these days, isn't it?
Amongst our whites. Yeah, absolutely. It's the wine of the moment with the white, certainly.
Gerstokes, you've had a chance to sniff and swirl and slurp and so on. What do you make of this?
Well, absolutely. I agree with much said by all present. I think it is a very nice, crisp wine. Definitely something that we can enjoy in the long summer mornings, as you say, as an aperitif leading up to a nice leisurely lunch.
And we've actually got, for once, my logistics have worked, Michael, and up here in Joburg, we've got a reasonably chilled glass of this. I wouldn't want to have it too warm. Am I right there?
Yeah, I think so. No, I think you certainly want to get it nice and cold.
Jeff Osborne, you've sat there very patiently while we've been slurping away. Are you enjoying this?
I've been drinking thoroughly, and I would agree with these suggestions of crisp and fresh. What is interesting for me is that I kind of, for whatever reason, migrated more towards Chenin Blanc. This almost in appearance, when you first look at it, is so light, as John said, one almost thinks it could be. But I'm delightfully surprised at how pleasant it is on the palate, grassy. I concur with the suggestion of some grapefruit there, and I even thought maybe a bit of lychee, but it's extremely pleasant wine, and I think I'm going to have some just prior to or with the start of my Christmas lunch.
Excellent. Well, the Strandfelt production, Michael, what else do they do? We're trying their Sauvignon Blanc. Do they have a range of wines?
Yeah, they do, certainly. They've got two ranges. The first sighting, the one that we're tasting now, is one of them. And they've got Shiraz there. They've got Pinot Noir there as well. And then the Strandfelt range, they've got a Pinot, a Shiraz, and then a sort of Rhone-style blend called the Navigator, and then a Bordeaux white flagship called Ademaster.
And Gareth, do you ever get the chance to head down to the Cape and do a bit of tasting when you're down there?
Oh, I haven't been for a while, but I do go and have a tasting every time I get down there. So last time I was at more of the touristy brands there at Groot Constantia, but always enjoyed it. So.
Nothing wrong with Groot Constantia. It's a great place by name and
well,
by tradition.
Well, I must confess to testing the six that they had on offer that day twice, which was a bit of a mistake when I looked out, I can tell you that.
But one thing I've noticed about some estates is, although the welcome can be reasonably warm, one is quite often asked to fork out a bit to pay. What do you make of that, Michael? Is it a way of keeping the riffraff away? Because surely in terms of marketing, you want people to taste your wine.
Yeah, what they do is they do say, you know, it'll cost you R35 to taste, but if you buy wine, we'll refund that amount to you. I think this really started in the early days of the Stellenbosch wine route, when sort of Friday afternoon about 2 o'clock, the students would start hoving in and on the wine estates, and then spend the rest of the afternoon there supposedly tasting, and roll up when the tasting rooms closed at 5.
Because of course, Michael, at one stage of your very impressive career in food and wine, you were managing the Lanzarach Hotel, which of course is certainly at that time was a great mecca for the students of Stellenbosch. These days it's been tarted up a bit and is full of rich Germans.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I mean, when I started working there in 1966, you could get a cheese lunch for 95 cents, and it had soup and bread and all sorts of things with it. I mean, one day we'll talk about that, but yeah, and you know, it was a great place for the students to go. So Friday afternoon was very busy on the Lanzarach stoop.
One thing that I really missed out on in my student life, and maybe it's because I went to uni in England, is really getting to know and appreciate wine. Admittedly, I was in Bristol, which is a city which has some of the country's most refined wine importers and some very big names. And they did try to cultivate the students, but I'm afraid I was more a beer drinker and occasional cider drinker in those days. Gareth, when did you first get to know and appreciate and understand that there is something special about wine?
Well, I mean, I think we always used to have a glass of wine on the odd occasion with mom and dad at the dinner table. But it's only a lot later in life that you really, you know, get down to it and start appreciating. I think as you develop your own taste, sort of the late 20s, I guess. I haven't been a massive wine drinker, but I certainly enjoy a bottle with a meal at a restaurant, and never say no if there's one on offer at one of the media dues, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, I've spotted you at the odd media do. I'm normally under the table by dessert, but I've seen you above it. Jeff Osborne, when in your life cycle did you begin to realise that there is something quite impressive about this stuff that comes in a bottle with a cork? Or I say that this is actually what we're tasting now comes with a screw cap, but you take my meaning.
I actually remember it very, very vividly, John, because I was 13 years of age and I was introduced to what was then known as Liebestein. And it came in a very, very large jar. I think it was something like 2 gallons. And I got horribly inebriated and I was sick as a dog. But that was my introduction to wine. But since then, of course, I've come a long way. I've moderated my intake, but I think my palate has improved steadily. But predominantly, I am a wine drinker. That is my preference. I used to drink beer as a student as well, but I've migrated to wine with the old Scotch. But wine for me is a delightful drink. It's so much to explore.
And of course, Michael Olafier, you were born in the winelands, if I recall correctly. So you've presumably had wine around you all your life.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know my parents were wine farmers, and certainly from a very young age, we had wine at meals, watered down when we were younger, of course.
Well, I hope they didn't exaggerate the water, because as we've discussed before, I quite often throw an ice cube or two into wine if it's a bit warm for me, and that can dilute it a bit. Yeah. But you don't want to take too much of the pleasure away. Michael, I have a confession to make. In some of the recent podcasts that we've been recording, I've mentioned social media and said that we must just make reference to it and its importance in communicating wine. And I neglected to follow up that conversation in our previous recording. So I'd just like you to recall for me and to explain to our listeners how important social media is for you as somebody who is doing daily commentary on wine.
Look, I think I was actually at a sort of freelance wine writer's lunch yesterday, and the people who were immediately sitting around me, all great Twitters and Facebookers. We're lucky we get to taste wine every single day, and I think as a favour to the people who produce the wines, I feel that I have to do something and try and encourage my followers to at least go into the bottle shop and buy a bottle. Quite often when we're sitting down and having a meal and we're having something pretty fantastic, I'll tweet about the wine and what we're having, you know, as being a perfect match. Wineries, of course, are great users of social media. I mean, Mike Ratcliffe of Warwick is one of them. And quite often they actually employ outside agencies, the bigger ones, to tweet for them. And they tend to lose that sort of personal touch which the regular estate tweeters have.
Well, Gareth, have you ever gone on social media about a meal or a bottle of wine, or do you confine it to had a haircut today and the sort of stuff I tend to tweet about?
I'm not a massive social media user, but my Twitterverse is limited to more financial matters, which don't always go hand in hand with wine, except if it's a bit of a crash on the day. But certainly by word of mouth. I mean, we're always talking amongst our friends about what we enjoy. What we enjoyed the night before. So I suppose that is a form of social media, just not online.
Jeff, do you want to share with the world? What do you ever share with the world what you've been eating and drinking? Or are you a bit reluctant to break cover?
I think I'm more sort of selfish about it, John. And like Gareth, I'm not really into the Facebook social media space, as it were. But just by way of interest, you talk about the Cape. Gumtree is particularly strong down there, and whilst it's not social media, obviously that's in the online space, and certainly very strong down there, and they do banner advertising, and there's something I'm certainly going to look at, is approaching some of these wineries to see if they're interested in advertising their wines on Gumtree.
Well, it's not a bad idea. I think as long as you can be confident that the product is going to arrive at your door or wherever you collect it in decent condition, I think there's going to be an exposure of social media, and I'll be interested to see the statistics for our latest Christmas. But sadly, we are about to have our last sighting of First Sighting, because we've come to an end of this particular podcast. Just a reminder to anyone who's been listening, we've been trying the Sauvignon Blanc, the 2013 First Sighting Sauvignon Blanc from the Strandfelt people down at Elim. And it just remains for me to say to a guru with many followers on Twitter, Facebook, and elsewhere, Michael Olivier, many thanks for your wisdom as always, Michael. Great to chat to you again.
Oh, John, such a pleasure. Thank you.
And thanks to our two studio guests, Gareth Stokes, great to have you on Divine Intervention for the first time.
Thanks, John.
And of course to Jeff Osborne. I'm sure this won't be the last
thank you,
chat
John.
We have together.
Absolutely. Thank you.
This has been Divine Intervention.